I'm speaking with Richard Painter, candidate for U.S. Senate. Mr. Painter, could you please tell me, Could you please tell us what you feel people should know about your biography as a candidate for the U.S. Senate?
Well, I believe very strongly that the corruption in government is something we're going to have to deal with. It's destroying our country. I saw government corruption firsthand as Chief White House ethics lawyer from 2005 to 2007, seeing what campaign finance can do, PACs, super PACs, lobbying. I've seen the impact on both political parties. It's a serious problem. I've written several books about it, what goes on in government and also in the financial services sector and the corruption there. And I've taught my students about it as a professor, and I think it's time now to take action, do what I can to fix these problems, and I think I can do that in the United States Senate.
Why are you running for the Senate, and what makes you uniquely qualified?
Well, I'm running for the Senate because I see a lot of problems that need to get fixed, particularly in the corruption of our government. Not only are Donald Trump, but the system we had before. With campaign finance and financial conflicts of interest. I've written about these issues, published books and articles on them, taught on these issues, lectured around the country. I was the vice chair of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. So I understand the problems and have some ideas about how to fix them. And the Senate's a good place to do that.
When and why did you move to Minnesota initially?
Moved to Minnesota in 2007 to be a professor at the University of Minnesota Law School. I previously had been a professor at the University of Illinois College of Law. My wife is a professor of music history. She's with the music department at the University of Minnesota, and she wanted to come here, and I certainly wanted to come here because I think it's a wonderful place to live. It's wonderful summers we have here. We have three middle school age kids, and we just love living in Minnesota, and we can endure the winters, so it's a very good deal for us.
Isn't it better for Minnesota to be represented by somebody who was born here or who has a long and storied history in Minnesota?
I don't think that's relevant. I think what's relevant is somebody who can address the issues that Minnesotans care about. A lot of Minnesotans are very worried about paying for health care, just like people all over the United States. That's a critically important issue in Minnesota. A lot of Minnesotans are very, very worried about climate change, which is obviously an issue across the globe. Now, of course, we have our unique environmental issues, such as the environmental impact of sulfide mining up near the Boundary Waters Canoe Wilderness Area and in the Duluth Watershed. Those are issues you learn about when you live in Minnesota. But I have to say, I found out a lot more about what's going on there and the potential devastating impact of those mines than my opponent in this primary, Senator Tina Smith. I'm strongly opposed to that mining. I think it's going to destroy our state. So it takes some time to learn about the specifics of life here in Minnesota and what people care about here in particular. But a lot of the issues have a global reach. Are certainly a nationwide reach, and those are specific to Minnesota. The fact that we're not addressing them, such as the pollution from sulfide mining in the Boundary Waters and that great risk, the reason we're not taking the right stand on that is, once again, the corrupting influence of money in politics.
What made you decide you were a Democrat, and when did you make that decision?
I'm an independent in many ways. I'm independent of the party, the political bosses in both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and I make up my own mind on the issues. I'm not going to go down a platform and say I'm going to do this, this, and this because other people call themselves Democrats or Republicans do this, this, and this. I looked at my positions on issues very carefully, and I'm convinced that a very large segment of voters who often support Democrats would agree with me on a lot of the issues, much more so than the voters who today support the Republican Party, which has changed dramatically over the years. Also, of course, in the Republican Party, run for federal office, you have to swear fealty to Donald Trump, and I'm not going to do that. I think he ought to be thrown out of office.
Can you explain the difference between the Democratic Party and the Democratic Farmer Labor Party?
Well, the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, of course, is Minnesota's Democratic. I mean, we don't have a separate Democratic Party. It merged with a Farmer Labor Party to create what we now call the Democratic Farmer Labor Party. My concern is that the Democratic Farmer Labor Party could very well be forgetting the interests of farmers and laborers as the party, along with both the Republican and Democratic Party nationwide, falls under the influence of big money in politics. And most of that money is corporate money. And that's a serious concern. And I'm happy to talk about that with respect to health care and whether we're going to ever have single-payer health care or whether we're going to kowtow to the interests of the medical device industry, which is very, very powerful in this state, and also, of course, the environmental issues and how the question of how strong a stand the Democratic Farmer Labor Party will take in this state on environmental protection and how strong a stand the Democratic Party nationwide will take on environmental protection. And is that going to be a question to determine on the merits or a question that is decided by the campaign contributors?
What does DFL mean to you, and what are the core values of being a DFLer?
Well, as I said, I would hope the Democratic Farmer Labor Party would focus on the interests of farmers and laborers, not just on the interests of financiers and lobbyists. So we're going to find out what DFL means to the party. But they need to have people who are nominated for federal office and for state office who represent the interests of the people. And that's what's critically important. So once again, I have my ideas about what we ought to do on specific issues. And it's up to voters in the Democratic Farmer Labor primary, and anybody can vote in that primary, to decide whether they want me or my opponent, Senator Smith. And then in November, we have another decision to make.
Minnesota is a diverse state economically. What are the significant economic interests in the state?
We've got everything from agriculture to education and health care and mining. We have a lot of different economic interests in this state. We are much more diverse ethnically and economically than we were even a few decades ago.
What connections do you have with Greater Minnesota?
Well, I am very concerned about the protection of the environment in the northern Minnesota, Battery Waters, the Duluth watershed. I share that concern with a lot of people who live in that region who do not want to see outside foreign-owned mining companies come in there and get into the sulfide mining business. So I share a lot of concerns with people in that region in environmental protection area. In the agricultural areas of the state, I am very, very concerned. I share the concerns that many farmers have about what Donald Trump is doing and his trade policy. When he's starting a trade war, and he's just starting more of this again today with China, with Europe, and other countries, the result is going to be a retaliation against American agricultural exports. That's going to devastate farmers. And I think that a lot of people in farming, a lot of farmers are going to be very, very worried about the direction of the Republican Party as it moves away from free trade toward not a fair trade policy, which is what I would support, but toward a Trumpian trade war. Which could really end up in a downward spiral, similar to what we had in the 1930s under Herbert Hoover. So this is an opportunity for opponents of President Trump's trade policy to reach out to the agricultural communities, to farmers, talk about the importance of a stable and fair global trade regime, and how Donald Trump isn't doing anything to support it, indeed may destroy our global economy. And I have say I'm very disappointed that our two senators and some other Democratic senators around the country gave Trump some encouragement with respect to his steel tariffs. I think that's a tragic mistake to egg on Donald Trump in his bombastic rhetoric about trade.
What experiences do you have in Greater Minnesota? Have you ever worked on a farm? Do you hunt? Do you fish?
No, I haven't done much on farms. I don't hunt, fish. I've got three middle school age kids. I take them to soccer games and pick them up from school. That's a lot of my extra time when I'm not working is with the kids here in the metro area. I have gone up to Minnesota, northern Minnesota, near the Boundary Waters, up near Ely, with my kids. We've done some hunting up, fishing up there with the kids a few times. That's a lot of fun, but I'm not one of these guys who goes out fishing every weekend or hunting every weekend. Just don't have time for it.
You've been a sharp critic of Donald Trump. What are the biggest threats he poses to America?
Well, that's going to be a long answer. Let's start with the Constitution. Got the First Amendment, which guarantees free exercise of religion. He was talking about a Muslim ban. During the campaign, and he sought to implement it with a travel ban. That's a direct violation of our Constitution, and we have never had a politician talk that way about a particular religion in the United States in recent memory in an election. They had that going on in the presidential election in Germany in 1932, but not here in the United States. We really can't tolerate that. His attacks on the freedom of the press and the lying press also are very, very similar to the attacks on the press in Hitler's Germany. We cannot tolerate that. And he's taken specific actions to retaliate against the Washington Post, MSNBC, other news outlets, CNN. He is receiving payments from foreign governments in violation of the Constitution. That's an anti-corruption provision of the Constitution called the Emoluments Clause. I've actually sued him over that, and working with other people are suing him over that. But the United States Congress should be investigating it. He has shown complete disrespect for the judiciary, said that a judge is not qualified to hear a case against him, the Trump University case, and is somehow biased because the judge is Mexican-American. Once again, we don't talk about judges in the United States being biased because of their ethnic background. That's the kind of thing that was done also in 1933 in Germany, before they threw all the Jewish judges off the courts. We got a lot of problems. This president does not understand the Constitution. He doesn't understand the law. He doesn't understand, or if he does, he wants to just violate it willy-nilly. He's guilty of obstruction of justice. We saw that in the firing of James Comey. Attempts to fire Robert Mueller. Drafting false statements for his son to get to the press about the Trump Tower meeting. I mean, the list goes on and on. He's not playing by the rules. So the Senate Judiciary Committee needs to have a hearing and looking at what's going on and decide what to do. Same with the House.
How has Trump's presidency hurt Minnesota specifically?
Well, it hurts Minnesota because we're part of the United States. And this country's one union, and he's destroying our country. He's destroying our Constitution. He's tearing people apart, too, by encouraging racism and stoking hatred. We saw that there in the Charlottesville incident. We've seen that several times since then. His race baiting tears people apart, including people here in Minnesota. As I emphasized before, his trade war is going to be a debacle for Minnesota farmers.
How do you prevent yourself from being just another rich white male lawyer in the world's most exclusive private club, the U.S. Senate?
Well, I'm more wealth than the average person in Minnesota for sure. Far less than my opponent, Senator Tina Smith. But I'm not sure that's relevant. What's relevant is whether I can serve the public interest. I do not have financial conflicts of interest. I have my retirement funds or mutual funds, same as Amy Klobuchar. Senator Smith, unfortunately, has millions of dollars worth of medical device companies I think if someone does have wealth, that doesn't exclude them from politics. I have a lot less than many people who've gone into politics, but it is important to get rid of financial conflicts of interest, not to hold stocks in the companies that are affected by the decisions you make on the floor of the Senate. I just hope to do the best I can for the people of this state and for the United States, being who I am.
From your vantage point, what differences did Paul Wellstone make as a U.S. Senator from Minnesota?
Well, he urged for reform. He spoke out against corruption in government, urged for reform of our health care system. He was a reformer, and I think that made a great difference. It's hard to get things done, given our system of campaign finance and everything else that's going on. So I wish there had been more senators like Paul Wellstone there, and more support from the White House. But it didn't work out that way. So he was able to get something done, but it's very, very hard. We need more people like him.
What differences did Al Franken make as a U.S. Senator from Minnesota?
Well, he was very clear in holding people in the Trump administration accountable. And I will say that he did a lot, he accomplished a lot, but the one thing I watched and followed in detail was when Al Franken was questioning Jeff Sessions in his confirmation hearing for Attorney General, and Al Franken asked specific questions about Russians and contacts with Russians, and Jeff Sessions lied. And that lie was later exposed, and Al Franken had the courage to say that that was either perjury or very, very close to perjury, basically perjury. So Al Franken called him on that, on national television. I wrote that very same week an op-ed in the New York Times calling on Attorney General Sessions to resign because of his false testimony in answer to Al Franken's question. Attorney General Sessions decided not to resign, but to recuse from the Russia investigation. But if Al Franken had never asked that question, if Al Franken had never stepped forward to state the truth, which was that that was a lie, that response to his question, and he had not had the courage to do that, Attorney General Sessions would have gotten a pass on that and would not have recused from the Russia investigation. And we wouldn't have Bob Mueller. So there is a direct line between that question by Al Franken, holding Attorney General Sessions account for his lying under oath, and Attorney General Sessions' decision to recuse from the Russia investigation, which allowed Robert Mueller to be appointed, not only to be appointed, but to retain his office and not be fired. We owe a lot to Al Franken.
What differences does Amy Klobuchar make as a U.S. Senator from Minnesota?
Well, she's a good senator. She, I think she, for example, opposed the Trump tax cut. If there had been a handful of senators like Amy Klobuchar, we wouldn't have had that tax cut. Handful more, and she said no to it. And so did Senator Franken. It's critically important that we stand firm against what President Trump is doing. So I admire Amy Klobuchar for the stand she's taken. There are issues I disagree with her on, for example, the sulfide mining, but I think that she's been a very good senator.
What's the most important thing about being a U.S. senator from Minnesota, specifically?
Well, I will start with what the most important thing is about being a United States senator, and we'll talk about the specifics from being a senator from Minnesota. A United States senator has an obligation to serve the public interest, and that means passing legislation that helps all the people, not special interests, not campaign contributors, and not the rich, not just the rich, but all the people, and in particular, legislation that helps the people who are the most vulnerable. A senator from Minnesota should stand up for the interests of the people here in particular, and that includes farmers who are going to be victimized by Donald Trump's trade war. That includes workers on the iron range, and that includes the people in the metropolitan area, particularly those who are unemployed or live in low-wage jobs. We have a lot of people in the state who need help, particularly people who need health insurance who don't have it. There's a lot of work to be done, and that's what we'd expect a senator from Minnesota to do.
What do you seek to accomplish as a U.S. senator?
Well, my priorities, this is a two-year term. So over this two-year term, finishing up Al Franken's term, I would emphasize, first, holding President Trump, Vice President Pence, and others in this administration accountable for acts, I believe they're acts of treason, bribery, high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, the way we got to find that out is we got to have a hearing of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I'd hope to be on it, and want to see those hearings happen very, very quickly. They should have happened at the beginning of this administration, because it's been quite obvious what's been going on, but the Republicans haven't been willing to do that. Second, we've got to get a health care bill through. I think we ought to have a single-payer system. Senator Sanders has a good bill. I want to take a look at it, make sure that it's paid for, that the money's there. If it's not, we'll have to impose a tax or premium or whatever that's based on income that allows us to collect the funds to pay for single-payer health care. But we got to bite the bullet and do that. I know the medical device industry doesn't want that. The drug companies don't want it. The insurance companies don't want it. But the people want it, and we got to do it. Senator Sanders has a good bill, and we can work off that and get that thing through. Third, we've got to focus on climate change. We got to get the United States back in the Paris Accords. We got to pass legislation that imposes a carbon tax, and then use some of the proceeds from that to subsidize clean energy. I mean, that's basic economics, and there's a big social externality that's negative from economic activity. You tax it, and when there's a positive social externality, you subsidize it. We need to do that. We've got to act very quickly on climate change, or we're going to be in a heap of trouble. We already are in a heap of trouble on climate change. You can see this with all the weather activity that's been going on. It's quite unusual and quite destructive.
Would you support the removal of caps on FICA and Social Security and making sure that every dollar is taxed as a dollar?
If they remove the cap, then they got to do it all the way up. It's absolutely critical to raise enough funds to continue to pay for Social Security and for Medicare. And if we're running short of funds, it would help raise funds. If we, you might have a lower percentage, but you could say that everything all the way up is taxed at 4 or 5% or something like that. But I don't think just raising it a little bit is the way to go. What I'm saying is...
No, I said removal. I said removal of the cap.
I would remove the cap and maybe have a lower rate above the cap, maybe have another bracket a little lower, because people probably is not going to change the benefit. I wouldn't pay out a higher benefit to people who are paying in more. And so you probably remove the cap, but maybe have a lower bracket up there, but I'd run it all the way up. Because if someone makes $100 million, you might ask them to kick 2 or 3% of that $100 million into the Social Security fund.
What's your path to success in the DFL primary for U.S. Senate?
Well, I'm going to take my case to the people and talk about the issues and ask people to vote on the issues. This shouldn't be about party identity. Or who's been in the club the longest. It should be about the issues. What do people want? People want single-payer health care? Do people want some other health care system? I'd like to have a debate with Senator Smith. That would help inform the voters as to what our different positions are in the areas where we have similar positions. And so a debate is, I think, critically important. But ultimately, I'm going to take my case to the people of this state, because they own the two political parties. We have primaries where anyone can vote in either primary, and people need to vote. Take primaries seriously, insist the candidates have debates, and then vote in the general election.
You've covered this a little bit. What are your criticisms of U.S. Senator Tina Smith, and is she qualified for the position?
Oh, she's certainly qualified for the position. She's very intelligent and articulate. So she's qualified for the position for sure, and she's had government service. There are going to be a lot of issues we agree on. I think we had a debate. The voters would see that we agreed on maybe 80% of the issues. I have emphasized some of the issues where we disagree. I just don't agree with her about the advantages of sulfide mining in the Duluth watershed, and that's the Polymet Glencore mine that's owned by billionaires from Europe, including some Russian oligarchs involved with that. And I don't want those people mining. I don't want anybody mining sulfide, doing sulfide mining in this state. And I certainly don't trust Polymet Glencore. So we have a strong difference of opinion on that. I don't know what Senator Smith's stand is on health care specifically. She would like to see, I believe, health care coverage for everybody. But the question is, how do we pay for that? And I think the single-payer system is what works. Where you really have to make a decision is about how we're going to deal with the drug companies and medical device companies. And I feel that even though the medical device industry is powerful in this state, the drug industry is powerful in other states, that both medical device companies and drug companies, along with insurance companies, which also have a lot of influence in this state, have been taking an enormous amount of money off the top. Medical devices cost a lot more in the United States than they do in Europe and Canada. Same with the drug companies. So unless we want to pay an enormous amount of money out of our own pocket to insure everybody, which is what I believe Senator Smith wants to do, as do I, we need to figure out how to pay for it. And I think the medical device companies, the drug companies, the insurance companies are taking way too much money off the top. And they need to get a haircut, and they need to get a big haircut. They're making a lot more money here in the United States than I'd say anywhere else in the world. And that's just not right. I'm just willing to bite the bullet and say, okay, it's time to have the single-payer system, which allows the single-payer to negotiate down those prices to the same prices that are paid in Canada or the United Kingdom or Germany. I don't think Senator Smith is there yet. She has close relationships with some of these companies. The Medtronic CEO had a fundraiser at his home for her 2 weeks ago. I think she owns that. She owns a lot of medical device company stock. And I'm just not sure she's willing to do that, to make those changes. I think we have to. And related to that, I do feel that every single member of the United States Congress, House and Senate, needs to sell off any investments that create conflicts of interest. Amy Klobuchar has done the right thing. She's got a mutual fund portfolio with mutual funds in it and life insurance. You could sell the stocks. That's what I've been trying to get Donald Trump to do for 2 years, to sell off his assets to create conflicts of interest. And it's awfully hard to stand up to Donald Trump and tell him to cut it out with his financial conflicts of interest when you have up to a third of the members of Congress have stocks that create conflicts of interest, and a handful, including Senator Smith, have millions of dollars worth of stocks that create conflicts of interest. So she does need to sell the stocks. That's absolutely critical, and I'm going to urge that going forward. I think I'm going to win in August, but even if she were to prevail, she's going to have to sell those stocks to win the general election. She's going to hear it from me. I have a small microphone. Or if she were to prevail, she'd hear it from Con Asley in the fall with $2 million worth of super PAC money, and that's not going to be pleasant. She's got to sell the medical device stocks and millions of dollars worth of them, and the conflicts of interest just don't work.
How many debates would you like to have? Would you support 8 debates, one in each congressional district? And if given the opportunity to debate Tina Smith, what questions would you want to ask her?
Well, I'd like to have as many debates as Senator Smith would like to have. I know her time is valuable because she's a United States Senator. She has a job to do there. I don't know whether she'd have time for more than 2 or 3 debates. That would be just fine with me. The great advantage of the internet is that people don't have to be at the debate or watch the debate on television on a particular night in order to see it. It could be put up on the YouTube or elsewhere on the web, and people can watch the debate at their leisure. And indeed, this is the way we could use technology and modern technology and internet to fight back against Citizens United, against And then, you know, we can go through the healthcare, and she might solidify her position or clarify her position on the healthcare. Hopefully she sold off the medical device company stocks by then, so we don't have to debate about that. And, you know, then talk about the sulfide mining.
That's about all I have. Is there anything else that you'd like to offer?
No, I very much look forward to this process. I've learned a lot in the course of running as a candidate from the people I talk to around this state about their economic needs, their concerns for the future, for their children, for the environment. I very much look forward to the primary and the general election.
Well, I thank you for your time, sir.